Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time. With your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
In New York, the moment the entire country has been waiting for after a very close race. NBC News now projects that Joe Biden has won the Keystone State, Pennsylvania, and its 20 electoral votes.
And that means we can now project that former Vice President Joe Biden has been elected President of the United States. He is President-elect Joseph Robinette Biden at 77 years old. Chuck, we'll turn to you. This map is a real interesting one, not necessarily the path that anyone thought.
Man is saying we're too harsh. New verses, please. Come on. Hey.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sportscast, a.k.a. iTunes' longest running weekly episodic program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? It's been a while. We took another one of our patented trademark hiatuses, but we are back for a very special edition of the podcast. This is our, I think this is the first time we've ever done this, with our post-election coverage, because 4 years ago would have been the first opportunity that this show would have had to have covered a presidential election, and nobody was really feeling in the mood, Marcus Vandenberg, to get into a big, deep conversation after that. So, but this year is different. This year, there's a different mood in the air. There's a different feeling in the atmosphere. So we've got a lot of folks that are joining us this week. But before we get into our guests, let me bring in my co-host. Let me bring in my tag team partner. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the man that hails from Southern California. He is Marcus. I often use an absentee ballot, but I will never be an absentee father. Vandenberg, what is going on, my brother?
What's up, Nate? How are you?
I'm doing good. Give my best to young baby Simba.
I will.
It's been a minute, brother. How have you been in the interim since the last time we hopped on the microphone?
It's a new day, Nate.
Yes, it is.
You know, woke up Saturday and birds are chirping. Sun was out. You know, white people were mad. So it was a good day, mate.
Yes. It was like the end of The Wiz. Like, can you feel a brand new day? So this is going to be a very fun show. We've got a lot of our various friends from across the podcast landscape. And so let's go around the horn. Like, I feel like this is a combination of, like, MSNBC or CNN election night coverage, and also like the Lou Rawls Parade of Stars, Marcus Vandenberg. And so, like, we don't know who's going to show up behind the door. So let's bring in first the man of the hour, the tower of political power. He is he's my North Star when it comes to these political discussions, Marcus. He's the man I trust. You know what I mean? The rest of the country got Steve Kornacki. I got my very own Steve Kornblackie. The professor himself, Chris Ealy. Chris, you were right, brother. How you doing?
I am doing well, man. This has been the beginning of this year. Doesn't even feel like the end of the year, man. It feels like a completely different year. I was the most depressed person on the planet with just everything that was going on around the virus, Kobe dying, personally with death in my own family. But then, you know, it started picking up at the end of the year, you know, got the Dodgers winning, got the Lakers winning, and now we got Kamala winning. So we got the California trifecta. Biden, too. I mean, he's going to be the president. So, I mean,
he's Alex Caruso to Kamala's LeBron.
Yeah. And I like Biden too, so I'll be giving him a lot of praise on this show.
All right, so we got Chrissy, our political scientist. Let me introduce the rest of the panel. First of all, you know, we had to bring our sister on because black women once again saved democracy. We'll see if this week a black woman can save this podcast. She is my co-host on the Black Lightning Podcast. You've heard her on TDT Talks, and you might be hearing her on the Patreon again very soon because we worked on a top secret project together a couple weeks ago, and it is my pleasure to bring on my friend, my sister, Vanessa Shark.
I feel like 55% of white women owe me money.
I'm glad you're here, Vanessa. And you know what? We might be able to get you some reparations sooner rather than later because just so happen to have a white lady on the line right now. She is one of my dear friends. You can hear her on the Jenny Position, among other places. Friend of the program, Jennifer Smith.
Brother Nate, count me amongst the 55%. I'm only here for Vanessa Shark. Sorry.
Yes, glad you're here, Jenny. And rounding out our panel right now, you know, we all about diversity here on the Kings of Sport, Marcus. And we feel like it wouldn't be true diversity if we didn't have a white man to join the proceedings tonight. And we got one of the very best white men out there, one of the best white men in the game right now, my friend. Again, you can hear him in the Jenny Position, Place of Nation, like all over the place. Tim Capel is with us. Tim, how are you, my brother?
Oh, Brother Nate, I'm doing quite well. I'm not one of those angry white people. I might make some white people angry, but that's all right. Thank you for the invitation. This is probably the first sports podcast I've ever done. So, very, very privileged to be here.
Yeah, we brought you here, Tim, because we really wanted to get into this whole Cam Newton thing. Like, what's going on with Cam right now? Is he just not reading defenses? Like, what is it? COVID? Is that why he's not connecting? Like,
yeah, that's got to be it.
But I'm glad you're here, Tim, my friend. Because I appreciate your wise sage outlook on this crazy world. So let's just kind of start at I guess the beginning of the end for one Donald J. Trump, because last Tuesday, a week from now from the time that we're recording this, it was election night in America, Marcus Vandenberg. And going into that night, like, were you confident? Because I was feeling good. I wasn't like overconfident or like we had it in the bag, but Chris been telling me for months, Marcus, that Joe Biden was going to win this thing. So I felt confident. But how were you feeling going into Tuesday night?
I felt good. I was, you know, one of those people that was on 538 daily checking to see what the odds were looking like. And, you know, it was looking like Trump had 1 out of 10 chance to win. And on top of the fact that, you know, you looked at his two debates weren't exactly helping him. You look at, you know, COVID, you look at just the last 4 years, I was like, well, this is going to be, you know, a layup. And election night comes around and I wasn't too worried. You know, I guess my only, you know, big criticism of the night was I wish the broadcast laid out which states were counting votes in which order. So with the states that were counting absentee first compared to in person, because I think that led to a lot of, I think, anxiousness for the Democrats in terms of, you know, you're looking at the votes and, you know, clearly Trump is running up the lead in some of these states like Pennsylvania and even Georgia. And, you know, I think that it would have mattered in terms of the other side coming up with these conspiracy theories about the election being stolen, but it would at least help the common person to understand, you know, sort of the process. But, you know, at some point during the night, though, I did have my come to Jesus moment of like, okay, if Trump wins again, like, you know, I'm going to just have to sort of embrace it and sort of move on. It wasn't either way. It wasn't going to be as bad as 2016, where I think everyone went in thinking there's no chance this dude can win.
Right.
And he won. So.
Yeah. Like for me, like I had it at like 75% that I was sure Joe was going to win, you know, but that 25% Marcus was always lingering. And it didn't help, like you said, the way the networks kind of rolled things out, because it was very much drama inducing and anxiety inducing and stress inducing, like you said, and like I sent the clip to Jenny and Tim as well as Vanessa. Like when it was all over, I felt like Pinky at the after the fight in next Friday when Craig goes into the record shop and Pinky finally beats Craig and has a gun on him and he's like, get out of my store, I'm Pinky, you don't know me, I'm Pinky. And then as soon as everybody leaves the store, Pinky has this moment of reflection where he's like, I mean, that fool had me scared, but I held my own. Fuck that. that's how I felt about the election, man. Because like you said, Chris has been telling me one thing all year, and I'll send this to you next, Vanessa. Chris has been telling me all year, like, Trump can't beat Joe, but he can certainly cheat Joe. And so I always like, I'm confident that Biden's going to win, but looking at the numbers, it was really stressful at points. So how did that night experience go for you on last Tuesday?
Well, I'm trying to remember. I was very high. And
I was going to say, how many glasses of wine did you go through?
I had a lot of wine. My husband made sangria. We had edibles. We were like prepared to be numb because I remember 2016 election night and I just was like, I was not prepared for that. And I just needed to prepare for any and all possibilities. And then I was like, well, I guess I'm going to bed. And it was just very perplexing. It was anxiety inducing checking the apps, and I told myself I wasn't going to be on Twitter, and then of course I broke my own rule, and I was like every second I was just like, oh my God, this is so, I will be the first person to say I'm not a Joe or Kamala fan. I am a pure. Yeah,
we'll definitely get into that a little bit later.
Yeah. I had all year, I was just stressing about it. Election night, I was, I didn't know. I was stressed, numb. And then the consequent week afterwards, where everyone was just prodding Nevada, leave us alone. Also, y'all owe me money too. We're patient. We are trying to do democracy in a very efficient and proficient way. So leave your little memes at home. Nevada is fine, okay? We were always going to be blue. We've been blue for the last 2 years or last couple elections. Leave us alone. That's my money.
Speak on it. Speak your truth. Jennifer Smith. Speaking of folks that may have needed some liquidation to get through last Tuesday night. How were you, my friend, being in the great state of Florida?
Oh, the great state of Florida. So I had already kind of decided that we weren't going to know anything election night anyway. So I knew that a lot of people were mailing their shit in. I knew it would probably be a clusterfuck. And so I stayed away from it for a while that night. And it wasn't until later on, till we started focusing in on states, that I became obsessed. And I think I more than made up for election night stress and the whole in the days after that. So yeah, lots of marijuana consumed at my house.
Cheers.
Tim was the Capel compound. Was it a dry campus, if you will, or
no.
Were you concerned?
I will say there was no marijuana consumed on the Capel compound, but there was a lot of other substance abuse going on. I definitely drank far too much for a Tuesday night, or probably any night. And that's, it's just, I was trying not to doom scroll. I told myself, much like Jenny, we're not going to know anything for a while. We knew that going in, like these states told us. And yet still, I find myself glued to the television. Did have a podcast earlier, which was good. That was a very good distraction to have.
Yes, we did schedule a podcast that night, which I think helped us quite a bit.
I think that was smart on our part. So that was early in the night. Got through that. Got to the liquor store before it closed, which that was really my only pressing obligation for the day. I'd already voted. I saw that the registrar had gotten my mail vote, so felt good about that, but still just had that really nervous energy, right? And, you know, around 9, 10 o'clock, put on TV, I'm watching the chart throb, John King doing his thing, of course. And you just get sucked into it. It's inevitable and unavoidable. And I definitely started going to a bit of a dark place. I think probably alcohol induced, even knowing, okay, this is that red mirage that they talked about. But as you see, all these swing states, like with a pretty significant margin in Trump's favor. And then he goes on and makes that disastrous, I don't even know what to call it, like victory speech, which was one of the most appalling things of this presidency.
Yeah,
but we can get into that. It was not a good night, to put it that way. Even knowing what I knew going in, even being an informed voter, and much like Marcus, looking at 538 kind of obsessively every day and running the odds and different scenarios, I think that irrationality sort of took hold.
So what about you, Chris? Because, you know, like, I'm not a political pundit. I just play one on the podcast, Chris. This is what you do, though. This is how you put food on the table, brother. So as somebody that knew all of this information and had all the data going into this, and then seeing, as Tim mentioned, that red mirage on Tuesday night, like, How did the night of the election, how was that as a viewing experience for you?
Oh, it was absolutely excellent because I knew what was going to happen. So
like a horror movie. All the rest of us looking at the election results through our fingers. Chris is just sitting there with popcorn and a beer, just having the time of his life.
it was a little annoying because one of the group chats that we are in, Nate, all night long, people kept on being like, Biden's losing. What's going on? And I was like, stop that. He's about to win. The minute that the AP called Arizona for Biden, that is when I knew that Biden was going to win the election. Because Biden didn't need to flip that many states. And now the media is still playing these games with Arizona. Like, Arizona's done. Arizona has gone for Biden. The AP never gets these kind of calls wrong, you know what I'm saying? So they have enough data at their disposal to know how the rest of the state is going to go. So Arizona is blue, and I just paid attention to all the trends. The Lincoln Project, my folks at the Lincoln Project warned me of this exact scenario. This was on... what everybody was hoping, including myself, is the election was going to get called that night. And I was even telling my friends that I think it was going to get called that night. That was what I was wrong about. But one of the scenarios, they had a bunch of different things mapped out. And one of the scenarios was, I think they got it down to the state as well, where it was going to be a red mirage where it's going to look like Trump is ahead. But once the mail-in votes start getting counted, that Biden is going to win, and he's going to win resoundingly. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, we do have to mention that Biden had the most votes, most popular votes than any other presidential candidate in history. But we do have to mention that Donald Trump has had the second most votes than any other candidate in history. So that's a little disheartening. But it's politics, man. You just kind of have to be patient and wait your turn. Donald Trump isn't making this easy. So the comparison that I'm going to make, this is going to be a sports comparison. So the King of Sports audience is going to like
this. See, right up Tim Capel's alley.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I definitely had to unmute for that.
So Hillary Clinton is the 94 Bulls going up against the Magic. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, they were the 94 Bulls versus Magic, where Donald Trump is the Magic in this scenario, where you got Jordan and he's back fresh off of a baseball stint, but his legs are not all the way what they normally are. So in seven games, he gets swept by the Magic. 95 comes around, and the Bulls tweak that team a little bit, and Jordan has his legs all the way back. That's who Joe Biden is. And I don't think Donald Trump was ready for that. Joe Biden is a seasoned politician. He's been doing this thing for years. He was a safe bet. He was protected by the sexism of this country. Hillary Clinton is not going to get the benefit of the doubt that a Joe Biden is going to get. So you go into that election knowing that. Joe Biden knows the game. Joe Biden was probably showing that he was nervous to his backstage cohorts, but he never once doubted the election. What cable news did this election cycle, which I don't like, was they propagated a lot of anxiety porn, you know. They know that this is the time of year where they're going to get the highest ratings ever. There were more than enough votes in more than enough districts called on Thursday night to award Pennsylvania to Biden. But because Donald Trump is Donald Trump and he's doing exactly what he's doing now, they wanted to wait until they were super close. Like they call states at like 40%. Once you know how the trends are going to go, there's no debating math. There's no debating data statistics. I'm in a PhD program. I've tried to have these debates with math. Damn you, math. I never win them because math is math. It's really that fucking simple. Data is data and trends are trends. So
if you're saying Joe Biden is Michael Jordan and what you're saying about math is math, is LeVar Ball never lost.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much, yeah. I mean, Donald Trump, give him props. He did win in 2016. But he was going against a flawed candidate.
Well, it was the perfect storm. Like the situation, much like, and that's why I want to pivot to 2020 with Vanessa, because I feel like there had to be a certain set of circumstances for Trump to win in 2016. You know, Hillary, like you said, Chris, there's a bit of misogyny there. There's a bit of Clinton fatigue. Like, people are just tired of kind of the Clinton dynasty. The Republicans spent like the last 20 years before that just bashing Bill and Hillary. So there was that built in a lot of distrust of the Clintons. But then we get to 2020, Vanessa, and there's so much going on this year, particularly when you talk about COVID. And as much as, like Chris is saying, give Trump credit. I'm not out here on these streets trying to give Donald J. Trump credit. But as much as I don't want to give a man credit, I do feel like had COVID not come around, this might have been a different story with this election.
Yeah. I had that conversation with my husband like last week. I was like, I think that they were going to do this playbook already, like what they're doing right now. But the pandemic kind of washed everything away. Like, there's nothing more. I'm not a numbers person. I don't do math. I literally took one math class in college and I got a D in geometry in high school. But what I know is like the sentiment of the people, you can't taunt and gaslight people, even your own people in your own circle for 4 years. And then a pandemic hits and then people die. On both sides, on all sides, viruses don't care. That's when I knew. I don't think it would have mattered what candidate. Almost not mattered, but it, because there is something to say about the the black-white combo that seems to work for the Democratic Party for presidencies. That's part of why Hillary and whatever his name was failed. I can't remember the guy's name.
Tim Kaine.
Yeah. The Democratic Party is progressive. It's supposed to look like the people that it's based. Like, that's the thing that the Dems keep forgetting. But I knew the pandemic when they just eschewed all responsibility and then kept having rallies and then their own people visibly dying, Herman Cain dying. And then it was just a perfect storm. And they were just
the economy.
Yeah. And then people, Nevada alone has the highest unemployment rate because we are a tourism city. We are dying in both multiple ways. We're dying in multiple ways here. We're never going to go red, no matter how many recall Sisolak signs. Sisolak is our governor, and petitions. They can have their little boat parades. It was never going to catch hold here. We lost so much because Trump refused to give us aid, sued us 10 million times. We were never going to go blue for Nevada. Never going to go red for Trump. But like, we were always going to stay blue. Like, that was just our thing. So I knew the pandemic, we lost so much as a country collectively. I think that was the March. I think it was the only time I've ever felt like I was on the same page with everyone else in this country when the lockdowns happened.
Can I interject for a second? Unless you got more to say, Vanessa, I don't want to step on you.
No, go ahead.
All right. So this is the thing. That pandemic should have gift wrapped a reelection to Donald Trump, because in the midst of those types of disasters, that's when a president is supposed to rise to the occasion. Donald Trump is so politically illiterate and stupid that this is a thing that I teach to my political science students at war, in class and stuff. You don't go to war with inanimate fucking objects because they're inanimate objects. You're over here warring with a disease. That disease doesn't give a fuck what your political affiliation is. The disease is racist towards everybody, sexist towards everybody. It's homophobic towards everybody. It's straightophobic towards everybody. It doesn't care. You know what I'm saying? It's like you are warring with literally somebody that you can't physically fight against. So, and that's was this strategy that he used. The Republicans that work for him know better, but because he's Donald Trump, they're afraid to tell him, like, look, this is a bad strategy, you know. But if he was George W. Bush when 9/11 happened, this dude was going around hugging babies, kissing people. He even got away with starting a war. You know what I'm saying? Donald Trump is incompetent.
Yeah, there were so many opportunities, like you were saying, Vanessa, like giving people aid, like appearing to act like he cared. Like,
he didn't. I think fundamentally he's inept and he's politically illiterate, but I also don't. He literally doesn't care. He fundamentally doesn't care. He went into the presidency, he wanted to get rich, and wanted to like leave. And like that was, I don't think he ever thought about the like what it takes to be a president. Like. You're supposed to be a reassurance for people in these times, and he didn't care about that. He didn't want to do that. He couldn't even do that for his own people. Let them out in the cold, with hypothermia. Yep. Like, it's political illiteracy, yes, for sure, but it's also the fact that he doesn't give a fuck. He doesn't. He fundamentally only cares about himself. Like,
which is why. Yep, which is why I feel like, regardless of what you think about Biden's politics, and we can talk about that a little bit later, Vanessa, but like, I think just the fact that you've got somebody who's a decent human being, like the contrast is so stark, you know what I mean? Let's turn to Biden and Harris for a second, because, you know, Vanessa mentioned there is some magic in that black-white combination, which is why all the podcasts that I do with Jennifer Smith are on the top of the charts right now. You can't stop that magic right there. But Jenny, so here's the thing. Like, I saw some of the things that you wrote it was Saturday, when we finally got confirmation that it was going to be Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, the president-elect and the vice president-elect. And, like, just the way that made you feel. Like, prior prior to this race, like, were you somebody that would have been inclined to vote for Joe and Kamala? And then, like, what was that moment like? Because, you know, I'm not, I don't think I'm telling tales out of school here, Jennifer Smith, but you were made emotional by the speeches that night. So can you speak to that a little bit?
I think it was I had been focused so much on no more Trump, that I felt sort of robbed of a moment of a woman becoming vice president. Mm. And so when everything was called on Saturday and then when we did the speeches, I think it all just sort of crashed down on me. And I looked at her, I think, kind of for the first time and was just sort of blown away. And then her words were beautiful. Mm. I mean, and the reaction that she got from the crowd there, and she was radiant. Her smile, like it, and all that sounds stupid. Like, you don't base anything on that, but like emotionally, I really did like it. And she was very inclusive of everybody. Both of them were. And it's just such a stark contrast from the absolute hate and disconnect from real people that I've felt for these entire 4 years. And like, I have never once felt like our president had any regard for me other than another fucking person, like just rule and control. Like, there's no, you don't get any. And it's sort of stupid to say that on a, like, a political show, but I feel like you can't just take it away, like the underlying decency of a person and how that, how you respond to them in that way. Well, and you trust them to take care of you.
And the thing is, Jenny, and I talked about this earlier in the week when I did a Review America with Brian Mann. Like, you know, there are certain things we can have disagreements about policy-wise, right? Like Vanessa and I could have a disagreement on infrastructure, or Tim and I could have a disagreement on military spending, or, you know, Marcus and I could have a disagreement on the tax code. But like, there should be certain things that are non-negotiable, like Black Lives Matter, like, period, end of story. Like, that's non-negotiable. Like, you know, LGBTQ rights, like, that, period, end of story, non-negotiable. The environment, period, end of story, non-negotiable. Fighting COVID, period, end of story, non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, over the last 4 years, Tim, and I think Vanessa speaks to it, like, just kind of being gaslit and being talked down to it. It's felt like America's just gotten out of an abusive relationship. And regardless of what you feel about Joe and Kamala in terms of their politics and their policies, like, just the fact that we have what seem to be two decent people, like, that's enough to actually put a smile on people's faces, Tim.
It is. And I do feel like we've been in this sort of state of collective trauma for the past 4 years, just enduring these microaggressions and in some cases macroaggressions day after day after day. And it's just inescapable the way that we had this president saying such nonsense on social media, jumping on Twitter to say anything. And it's just complete bullshit, and you can't get away from it. You're just constantly, it's like having an internet troll as the president of your country. It just felt like, so endless.
Lord have mercy. Yeah.
Yeah. He started a war with the disease. Yeah. Then he starts a war with science. And now he's starting a war with counting.
Math, yeah.
All the hard sciences.
You know, it kind of makes you think math doesn't care about your feelings. Infectious diseases don't care about your feelings. And this is one of those go-to tactics, I think, that for some reason seems to be very popular with Republican politicians, these wars of ideology. And a lot of times those do gain traction because they are very emotionally charged. But when you run up against something that's undeniable, like COVID and who it attacks, and you decide, oh, we're going to go to war, and there's no actual logic or science built into your strategy, it's not going to work. And on Saturday, I think, you know, we really it felt like rounding a corner to me. Yes, Joe Biden had been announced as the president-elect, and that was a big sigh of relief that many people had that morning. But to see his actual acceptance speech and to go, oh, wait, this is really happening. And like expectations, like under the floor, like underwater compared to like, this is the president. So when you hear your president-elect, I don't know, speaking in complete sentences, being coherent, caring, projecting that he has confidence and competence and is going to take care of things, it just goes so much further than it otherwise should. And I don't know, that Saturday night, I think I described it as, it felt like the optimistic, hopeful season finale that this country needed after the hell of a season that we've had this year. My God.
It's like the end of Avengers Endgame. Like, and whoever put together that meme is
we've
amazing.
We've all seen the meme, right?
Yes.
It's a bit like that.
But Marcus, I don't want to get petty, but you know, you've been much like Donald Trump has influenced the country the last 4 years. You have influenced me the last 7 years of this podcast, brother. So you and I, it's funny because we started this show in 2013. So 3 years before, 3 years before Trump was elected. And so the bulk of this show's run has been under the banner of the Trump presidency. But, you know, you and I have experienced maybe dealing with somebody who is a little outsized bit of a personality. And then once that personality is removed from the equation, things just seem to work better. And so, yes, like there's a specific segment of the audience that is laughing their ass off right now. And I appreciate y'all for that. But Marcus, like, how has it been for you? Like, just kind of seeing where this country's gone over the last 4 years. And then the moment Saturday night when, like Tim says, we're not out of the woods yet, but it does seem that we've rounded a bit of a corner.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you don't realize how much he's impacted you. Or at least I didn't realize how much he's impacted me until Saturday. And sort of just knowing that, all right, like, he's going to be gone. And like, I'm not, you know, I'm not someone who's sitting here believing any of the smoke screens and lawsuits that he's filing at. Like, he's going to be gone. So yeah, Saturday was just one of those moments where you're like, all right, like, this is, you know, going to be a fresh start, at least 4 years of having, you know, two adults in charge. But then you start thinking about, while I'm glad we saw record numbers for voting on both sides, to be honest, it does make you wonder what was the other 71 million people seeing in this man who, I think if Trump presented himself as, you know, halfway smart, I could almost understand why people vote for him. But the fact that, you know, he comes off as a perpetual child on top of the fact that he sort of mishandled and has done poorly during the pandemic. That's where I'm just like, I would love to know of the people that voted for Trump, how many of those people lost family members to COVID? Just to see that people are despite losing loved ones to this disease that could have been somewhat preventable, they are still so fascinated and locked into this man who does not care about them. He does not care about sort of quote unquote Trump space, which is not an upper middle class base by any means. It is a poor white base, a Midwestern base that he managed to still win easily. So that stuff like that, I see.
And the fact that he does it to their face, Marcus, like when he was in Erie, he's like, I didn't even want to come to Erie, Pennsylvania, but they told me I had to be here.
How fucked up is that? Jesus Christ.
At least he lost Erie.
If you've spent some time in Midwest Ohio, or it's like in deep in Ohio, you'll know why he appeals to white people. I'm from Ohio. I left Ohio. I am glad I left Ohio and Nevada now. Ohio is a cesspool. And a lot of the Midwest is like that. It is a cesspool of white supremacy and anti-choice and homophobia. You cannot be yourself there. You can't. It's not possible. If you are someone who falls outside of the norm, you cannot be who you are. It is a crushing state. And those states right there, a little panhandle, Rust Belt, Bible Belt, that's all they, that's, he appeals to them because that's who they are. They're, a lot of them are uneducated. A lot of them will, they just say what they mean in a few short words like he does. Like, it's not that he, we can't comprehend it because we're not them. Like, it's just, it's two fundamentally different Americas. And it's, I 71 million people voting for him is not unsurprising. It's not unsurprising, but it was, it's so,
well, and the thing is, Vanessa, like,
it's horrific.
Exactly. And I wanted to pivot this over to Jenny because Jenny, you know, talking about, you know, the panhandles, Bible belt, like,
like, that's where I'm from, baby.
Like, I feel like, not everybody that voted for Trump is like racist or sexist or homophobic, but it's like the dude that you rocking with is. At least he plays to those feelings and those emotions. It's like they're like, again, like there's real grievances that folks in those areas have when it comes to the economy, right? When it comes to healthcare. And it's like, but Donald Trump is not doing anything, Jenny, at least in my opinionation, to solve that or to address that. So like just kind of living it, because you're even more Southern than I am. So like in that area, like what has been the appeal of Donald Trump to maybe folks that you know?
I got to tell you, I mean, I know I'm not alone in this, but just in within my own family, it's frightening. Like, and my timeline is just like a mass of like all these people spouting this bullshit. And some of them I've known my entire life. And I don't know. Like, I wish I knew. Like, why am I different from my family?
Honestly, you're the anomaly.
Like, why? And I'm sitting here in the panhandle and I'm driving by these stalls that have Trump flags and there's like 60 cars up there buying like Trump flags. They're on the boats and the beaches and on cars. And, you know, I wish I knew. Like, it makes me sad that this is what they are gravitating to. Like, why are we doing that? Is it
okay?
Do you need more education? Like, or do you not get it?
I'll say this. I'm kind of more on the Nate side of things.
Well,
with
yeah, because I did want to like, hold on, Chris, because I want to have my beautiful segues, baby. That's all I got in this world. I'm like Chris Paul, as Tim Capewell knows. I'm a good distributor. I'm a point guard up in these streets. So, like, I hear what you're saying, Jenny. I'm going to act like Chris never said anything, and this is a flawless segue.
Wow.
So, I hear what you're saying, Jenny. And the thing that I would like to know is, like if you're a Republican, I think that that's, you know, that's not my political ideology, but we can have reasonable disagreements. And so, Chris, you know, you're somebody who has worked with the Lincoln Project, a group of disaffected Republicans who are anti-Trump. So, like, what's been your experience, you know, with this whole idea of, you know, conservatism versus Trump, I guess?
Okay, so 71% of those people that voted for Trump, 71 million people that voted for Trump, they're not MAGAs. They're just people. There's some of them that are just people that are never going to vote for a Democrat. Like, really that simple. And some of those people enjoy the tax cuts. We can't, they're not monolithic is what I'm trying to say. It's they're different sects of those groups. There's a good 30, maybe 35% of them that are MAGAs, that don't believe in math, that don't believe in science, that don't believe in counting, that think they can pray everything away without doing any work. You do have those people, but then you've got the people that just, you know, they like Donald Trump for various different reasons. Some of them might not even like Donald Trump if they're going to vote for the guy. What we have to do as a society is we just have to kind of rage against all kinds of anti-intellectualism, even if it seems minute. I would never, like this last month or so, I was not going to give Ice Cube or any of these dumbass fucking rappers a break because what they were doing was toxic and dangerous, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't think I don't think Ice Cube was the worst offender, but he definitely was an offender. And
a candidate Kanye.
Yeah, Kanye West, all of those guys, you know, they Lil are Pump. Feeding into this. And the thing, I don't even know who the fuck that is.
Neither did Donald Trump.
Yeah, I found out who he was when Trump called him Little Pimp.
Little Pimp.
Yeah, so, But anyway, this is the world that we're living against, and this is a tie that people like us are fighting against. When you are rich, it's so easy to not care about people below you. I'm middle class. I'm just middle class. I just recently got to middle class, maybe a couple of years ago. But
okay, Chris.
Show
off, all right, Bradford.
I know, right?
But what I can say though is every level you get to, it's hard to go back down to the next level, and it becomes easier to get selfish when you attain everything, and that's not how a successful society should work. We need to be looking out for everybody. Maybe not everybody needs to be a billionaire, but you know everybody
there should
needs
be no
to have
billionaire.
Yeah, like everybody needs to have a seat at the table at the very least.
Yes, and like I want to hit this with Vanessa real quick because Vanessa's out here working hard. So, you know, I want to make sure that in case she has to dip on us, we get this conversation on the table, because one of the things I love about my sister Vanessa Shark, y'all, you may have noticed through the course of this conversation, Vanessa got a little bit of that revolutionary spirit in her bones, a little bit of that fire, you know what I'm saying? She got that Hercules Mulligan in her, and that's a reference she understands now because we watched Hamilton together. So obviously, like to me, like Joe was always my choice, Vanessa, not because he was my favorite candidate, but because I figured he was the one who had the best shot of beating Trump head to head. But obviously, like you and I had a difference of opinion on that. Like you're a little bit more progressive than I am. And like, I think we want the same things. We just might have different ways of getting there. But how do you feel now about Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in terms of not only leading the country, but being the kind of titular head of the Democratic Party right now?
I think they'll be a lot easier to push further left than what we had before. I think Kamala Harris as a Black woman is going to be easier to push on progressive ideals and policies than, well, Joe would be. But I think it's easier to negotiate when you have, you know, educated, experienced people at the table. I mean, it's going to be easier, but what I don't want is for us people like me and to get lazy and to get content because if the fight got a little bit easier. No, I want to keep pushing. Like, it's not just, okay, cool. Like I hope they are looking very deeply and hard at the fact that the Black Lives Matter movement and the progressive and democratic socialist candidates, this is not just going away. Like, we are not going away. You want to include us in your party? Include us. Update your damn tactics on how you campaign. We're not yelling because we're like, you guys suck. You do suck. You're bad at your job. Keep fucking saving you. That's the fuck. And I'm fucking tired of having you guys, the Democratic Party, continuously giving us little inches every damn decade, and then being like, oh no, Black women saved us. We fucked up again. And then we have to fucking come save your asses. And then you go fucking back to giving us fucking nothing. No, I'm not doing it. I'm 30 years old. I lost 4 years of my 20s to fucking Trump. Okay. We're not going back to the Obama years. We're going to keep fucking pushing forward. I'm not doing this shit anymore. So I'm excited for Dems. I'm excited for liberals. They got their fucking wish. Cool. Y'all can go back to brunch. I'm going to keep fighting. I'm going to keep marching. I'm going to keep protesting. I'm going to keep donating to mutual aid funds. We're going to keep this ball going. Like, I'm excited that I don't have to fight in a Trump's America for 4 more years. That's what I'm really excited about. I am relieved.
Yes. Like, I feel, I appreciate it, Vanessa. Like, again, this is why I feel like Vanessa and I vibe. Because I think that, like, if we were going to go from 0 to 100, like, there's a big part of the country that just ain't ready to make that move yet. So you do need, like, so my vision, like, my idea in my head, Vanessa, is that the country is a ship, like a boat, right? And on the top deck, we got good old steady Uncle Joe. And he just, you know, Joe's just keeping us on a straight path. Oh, here comes an iceberg to the left. Let me lean this way. Oh, here comes a glacier to the right. Let me lean this way. I don't know why so many icebergs and glaciers in this ocean. Let's keep going. Wow. Let's keep going straight.
Is this the Titanic?
I feel like we all just jumped off the Titanic. But underneath, like below deck, you got people like AOC. You got people like Bernie. Yeah. You got people like Stacey Abrams. Like, changing Corey the machinery. Bush. Corey Bush, yep. Changing the machinery of government. But that's something that takes a little bit longer to actually fix than just keeping us on course. So I think you need both. Like, you need both working at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And I'm with you on that, Nate. I think that, like, people like me and you, I used to be the most woke dude on the planet.
Yo, Chris was the angriest brother in the world, Vanessa.
Chris would wake up
at breakfast yelling at people.
But if you're too woke, if you've got too much Mountain Dew in you and caffeine pills and 5-hour energy,
you
know,
too much
stuff,
dip on your chip.
What happens is you start falling asleep at the wheel. So you have to, and I've been playing this politics game for a long time, and there's a lot of finessing that you have to do. I was listening to an interview with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and she found out when she went to Washington that, you know, there are just certain things you can't afford to do. You know what I'm saying? She would have been in heaven if there was 4 years of Hillary Clinton. You can afford to be both sides or bad ever in politics. That's just not something you can do. You can think one side is worse, but when you start trying to equate both sides, it's a very, very slippery slope that's really hard to get out of, because you're no longer thinking with your head, and you're starting to think with with your feelings, you know what I'm saying?
And I know politics, I'm talking right now.
Yeah, and politics does not give a fuck about your feelings. It's just, it just is what it is. So, it's a good time to mention this too. That's why I've already begun the preliminary paperwork to start a nonprofit organization where the primary focus is getting young minorities interested in political infrastructure, because you got people like Ice Cube and these other dumbass fucking rappers. Before I continue, shout out to the Atlanta rappers. They helped save this country too. So shout out to them.
Shout out to LeBron James, because this is a sports show. LeBron did the damn thing.
Yeah. LeBron James, Common, Jermaine Dupri, all those
Lil
people,
John.
Man. Lil Jon,
the WNBA,
WNBA.
You know, they help get us back to a place where we can start negotiating things now. Once we take back those Senate seats, we'll be in a good place. But what happens with a lot of minorities, not just minorities, but people in general, they think about capitalism and how capitalism works and how anybody can go from nothing and ascend to making a lot of money. What happens with us though is that's where our thinking stops. We do not think about the political infrastructures that are set up to have us fail. And who, like, you think about earning the money, but what happens once you get the money? We've got to get out of that mindset. We have to think of, like, the Bushes, the Kennedys,
we've
all those
been getting
people
out of that mindset, though. I think you're being a little bit general, though. Like, there are rappers who've been having this kind of conversations, like, well before. Like, you have rappers like Cardi B having conversations with Bernie Sanders about
Cardi.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you're making general, like, oh, we just get capital. Like, all of us, that's all minorities.
No, it's not all of them. Cardi B is one of the smarter ones. And I got it. Thank you for reminding me, Vanessa. Shout out to Cardi B. because Cardi B did an interview with Joe Biden, and all she did was ask questions. Ice Cube had a chance to meet with the vice president, and he was like, okay, why are all these other niggas here? You know what I'm saying? It's a weird, weird thing, but it's something that you have to finesse. And I'm not generalizing all the rappers. I'm generalizing the dumb rappers. And if you know the smart rappers, just let me know so I can make sure that I give them the shout outs. But the only ones I see on television, unfortunately, are the Ice Cubes and are the, you know, whatever, like the
Atlanta.
Yeah, I didn't find out about what the rappers down south in Atlanta were doing until I was watching like an episode of Roland Martin. So that's where I sit on that. But I do think that we have to start thinking about society as we need to be. It's not enough for just us to just have money. We have to have money and we have to have government control. The Kennedys, the Bushes, all of those popular political names, they made their fortune. And then what did they do? They started running for office and getting in office and manipulating systems to their advantage.
So you want to minorities do the same thing?
What's that?
So you want to black people just go in and do the same thing? I don't want what they have. I don't know. I think we're fundamentally just different because
no.
I think that I would rather talk about less than like dumbass rappers and talk more about
so consider
the organizations and the actual people on the ground working to get people registered to vote, like the on the ground people. We're spending a lot of time talking about rappers that actually had no effect on this election whatsoever. Like black people still voted the way they were going to vote. Like I don't understand what this part of this conversation is. I'm a little confused because
consider this. Let's take what's the sweetheart's name that died in Kentucky? Breonna Taylor. She played the game the way she was supposed to play the game. She was able to lift herself up from humble beginnings and become a EMT. That's good and a great noble position to have. So being an EMT is not easy. That is not an easy thing to do when you make it to that level. She was at her house with her boyfriend and a cop came over there, shot, you know, the boyfriend shot because he didn't know what was going on, legal firearm owner. The cop came, shot her, killed her, and the district attorney defended the cop. And the cop was able to kill Breonna Taylor and go home to his wife that night and eat breakfast with his family the next morning. If there are more of us in charge of these decisions, something like that is less likely to happen. What happens is we give up this kind of power to
the attorney general was black, bro.
But that's the thing. He's black by name only. He was black and he was on their side. He was
right.
He was black,
so
you
can't just say minorities
side.
Need to be in certain positions. You're what you're saying.
No. My right minorities need to be in certain positions, and the right people, the right good faith actors need to be in certain positions. It's not as simple as that's why this nonprofit that I'm starting. Once the paperwork is drawn up, I encourage you to look at what I'm doing. Because what needs to be happening is we need to think about power structures and how we can make sure that instances like this, if they do happen, the people who commit them are accountable for it. Because that's what I don't like. It's like, okay, yeah, she got $13 million. Who knows what Breonna Taylor would have been if she lived for another 10 years? She might have decided she wanted to go to med school and be a doctor. And she might have saved a bunch of lives. We're never going to know that because these rambunctious-ass cops shot and killed her and are not going to ever spend a day in jail because of it. That's what makes me angry.
Mm.
Okay, I'm done.
See, I liked it, though, because, again, I think one of the things that you just brought up there, Chris, is very important. Like, we can have disagreements, but I feel like everybody here is talking in good faith, right? Like, right. Everybody is working yes. towards something. We have difference of opinions, but at the end of the day, like, it's not like there are ulterior motives. Whereas one of the things that I was talking about earlier with Jenny, like, when you're talking to some of these folks that are deep in that MAGA contingent, you can't even get past the basics. You can't even get to a good faith argument because, again, the bar is in hell. So, when we get to something like kind of structural change, because, you know, a lot of people like, the system's broken. The system ain't fixed. The system's broken. Like, nah, Tim, mm-hmm. the system works as designed, right? The system was put in motion for these desired results. And so, yes, I am extremely happy that we have a new president-elect and vice president-elect. But as somebody that's a wise white man, Tim Capel.
Oh, God. Let's not give me that much credit necessarily. We'll try this, okay?
So, what's your outlook?
Something that comes to mind, and bear with me here, there's mm-hmm. a saying, okay? Don't let the perfect become the enemy mm-hmm. of the good, right? Mm-hmm. That's a saying. And as a progressive, if you're someone who identifies as progressive, you would really want to reject that statement outright because that's not good enough, right? And I would agree, that's not good enough. I don't think Joe Biden personally is good enough, but mm-hmm. the state of affairs in this country in 2020, mm-hmm. it's a shame to say that the statement is really don't let the perfect become the enemy of the mediocre. And that sucks.
Don't let the perfect become the enemy of the bare minimum.
It's terrible. It's unacceptable. But the fact is, get this asshole Donald Trump the fuck out of there. That's your first step, right? You've just got to stop the bleeding. Get at least someone who is closer to being on your side and on the right side of history, frankly, mm-hmm. and then hold his fucking feet to the fire, which that's kind of where mm-hmm. I am right now. And I think that's right. where Vanessa is right now, where hopefully all of us are. We realize, okay, this is not the finish line. This is maybe, you know, a few inches ahead of who we're trying to outrace. And it's going to be a long, continual struggle. And there's still a lot more work to be done. But let's continue to do it and not get complacent. Let's have a good day. Let's have a good couple of days.
Yeah.
And I think that Saturday and this weekend gave us that. And then it's like, you know, back to work. A lot of us have never stopped doing that work.
But it's like the part.
You need the wins to continue the work. You know, you need the small victories. And this was a very large one that we needed in order to continue to bolster us in that way.
I was just going to say, Jenny, like, this is like a marathon. Like, I ain't never ran on no damn marathon. But I've seen marathons on TV with all the white people in the Kenyans running down the street. It's like one Kenyan, like, 50 yards ahead of all these white people. I'm like, this is crazy. But, like, there's one point in every marathon where, you know, somebody hands them a cup of water, a cup of Gatorade. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the race isn't over. Right. The job isn't finished, but you do need to allow yourself a chance to recharge and re-energize and reload. And I feel like that's where we're at right now, Chris, is that the last 4 years have been so collectively draining on the country that this election is a chance for everybody in general, but in particular, you know, Democrats and liberals and progressives and independents who feel that way to kind of recharge, reload and get ready for that next level.
Yeah, exactly, man. Like, I've been doing this work for so long, and it's frustrating, annoying, thankless work where people will say, oh, you cats don't do anything, and, you know, you don't ever take into account how hard it is just to get a meeting or something. That's why I'm kind of down on a rapper if you get a meeting with somebody and, you know, you don't use the meeting for something constructive, that's a problem. But you get these meetings with these politicians and it's a game. And then you have to realize once you've been doing this long enough, you get to a point where you realize, you know what? the change that I want to see in this organization or in this world might not happen while I'm around to see it. And then you have to reconcile yourself with, is this something that I want to continue to fight for? Or is this something that I'm just going to give up, or I'm going to get mad and frustrated? Like, that's the thing. So I'm always in a bad mood. I can verify that.
Yeah,
I'm always angry because this work is hard to do, but it needs to be done. And even if I'm like, say I leave the state of California, hopefully I leave the state of California in better shape. If I leave my school that I work at, either school that I work at, hopefully I leave that place in better shape and get them to at least think about things differently. The one thing I can't afford to do is give up. And that's one thing that none of us can afford to do. You know what I'm saying? We need to be, everybody here should have their congressman or woman's number in their fucking cell phone. And you can do it. It is possible to do. I've done it. It's not easy, but it's possible. If that's not as far as you want to go in the fight, that's fine. But there's got to be some kind of mobilization going on. That's why I'm starting my nonprofit. That's why I do these shows with Nate and Marcus and all of you ladies and gentlemen, because I just feel like if the minute you take your foot off the gas, these Republicans don't understand science at all. They don't care to understand science. The one science that they do understand is the science of politics. So even if they hate a motherfucker like Donald Trump, even if they can't stand him, even if they think he's a disgusting self-righteous pig, they're still going to vote for him because he's catering to their interests. With what Tim said, we oftentimes as Dems, progressives, whatever, we let good be the enemy of perfect. And like I said, I used to do that all the time. So I'm speaking from my own personal experience. I understand the anger. I understand the angst. I understand who the fuck does this guy think he is. I understand it all, but we still have to, we have to keep trying. And then hopefully we make it easier for the next people not to have to play these finesse games that I'm having to play.
And the thing you brought up right there, Chris, again, like, and it's something Vanessa and I talked about Saturday night. Is that, you know, this election wasn't just for us, right? It just wasn't for our generation, right? Like, it's for those that go beyond us, right? Like, if John Lewis didn't think about the next generation or the generation following that, where would we be? And so, like, you know, one of the things that I thought about when I cast my vote, it didn't take me like an hour to think about it, Vanessa, because before I even got the envelope, who I was going to vote for. But it did. I did have a point where I'm like, you know, like I might not be around for various reasons to see like the change. But this is for my nieces more so than even myself, because like they deserve a shot. They deserve an opportunity at this so-called American dream. And so, yeah, I think that like it's. It's a marathon, but it's also a sprint at the same time, Vanessa. It's a really, really long sprint.
Yeah, I will always think. I think I will always want to fight for other people, but I think I voted for this election to make sure that I had a future of family for me and my husband. Like I had told him, I was like, if Trump gets elected for another four years, we're not having a biological kid. I'm not birthing in this country. But if we do, we don't have sex. Let's do it. that's the optimism that I would allow myself to have. Cause yeah, I'm going to still fight, but like there are things that I couldn't even allow myself to hope for and have if in a Trump America, You know, like I can't, I'm a Black woman. I have been fighting my whole life. There is no rest for me. I will be fighting and I will always fight. And I'll fight for my kid, my future kid, I'll fight for my dog, I'll fight for everyone. Like, that's just that's my spirit, you know? But I'll fight for Nate's nieces. I haven't even met them. Like, every Black girl in this country, I'll fight for. Every Black and brown country girl, I will fight for, because no one's fighting for them but us. And it was nice to see 70, you know, Biden get the most votes out of anyone, because those people are voting for out of exhaustion, of course, the 4 years of Trump, but they're also voting because they do believe that, you know, we all are equal at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know? There are people who, I was on a Zoom call with a few CW actresses, DC TV actresses, Florida Dems organized a Zoom call prior to the election, and Leslie Ann Brandt, who plays Mazzy on Lucifer, said, "We know our tax bracket is going to get affected by Biden's plan. We are taking the pay cut. I'm okay with that, so that we can have health care and we can have we don't have, you know, abortion rights. We don't get rolled back. Like, there are people who are in the 1% or whatever that care, and they will pay their fair share or more than their fair share of taxes." Because there are people like us and below us that have less than. There are kids that don't eat, you know? And that, for me, was to give me optimism more so than a Biden speech or a Harris speech. Even though I will say there is satisfaction to Trump's era ending with a Black woman in the White House.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, you talk about different tax brackets. So let's swing that around to my tag team partner, Marcus Vandenberg, who lives on the biggest house. On this side of town. Let me tell you something, Vanessa Shark. Marcus Vandenberg, last year, he spent more money on spilt liquor in bars from the side
of the other. My name is Vandenberg, so I figured my guy was rich.
He's a fancy brother. But Marcus, like all jokes aside, like, you are a new father. Like, one of the best moments of the show over the past year was, you know, talking about young Simba. And so obviously you were going to vote for Biden, I assume, but like, did being a father, does that play into the way you kind of view America now? Has your worldview changed over the past year?
I haven't had that moment yet where, especially being, you know, a father of a Black son, where you see something on the news and you connect it back to your own family. I think maybe because he's so young, he's only a year old. I'm sure at some point we'll have that. There'll be that moment where something will happen, and, you know, I'll see him as opposed to whoever is the victim. But even during, like, the George Floyd stuff this summer, it didn't really tie in. I was going to be voting for Biden regardless. that wasn't a question. Mm-hmm. But for him, it's like, I couldn't imagine another 4 years of Trump knowing that he would probably be old enough to start realizing, or at least being impacted by some of what would have happened between now and 2024. So in that sense, it really, you know, worked out that he'll look back one day and he'll remember none of this time. He'll, you know, sort of like, I was born in 83, which was... It was Reagan, right? Reagan was two terms?
Yes. Yeah.
1884? Yeah. So, like, you know, I vaguely remember Reagan as president towards the end of his second term, but, like, I wasn't directly impacted by Reagan. You know, unfortunately, I'm sure, you know, during the 80s and during the crack era, there are definitely people around me who were impacted by his policies and stuff, but personally, I wasn't. So I think with him, it'll be something that will come up in the history books, which I think I would love to see the history books and things of how,
oh my God,
the Trump 4 years is sort of, how do you tell that story to?
Yeah, look, Marcus, it'll be just one page with a picture of Trump and earmuffs, Tim and Jenny. It'll just be like a one big caption, like, "This nigga." that's all the history books will have to say about Donald J. Trump. Like, this nigga right here.
You know what? I don't know. My first thought is just like, how about we just erase him from all of it? But then I'm like, no, because I feel like there's a lot of valuable lessons.
Those who do not learn history.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we cannot afford to like not learn those lessons. Yeah. And also, we cannot afford to let these 71 million people run off to Parler, wherever the fuck they're running, and continue on with what they're doing. We have to reach out for them too. As much as we're fighting for little girls and everything else, like, we still have to get those people on board somehow, if we can. I mean, like, I feel like there's still some room there, maybe.
Who would have thought?
That's a Jen and Tim job. That is not a Nessa job. I am not
talking like that. First thing, like, who would have thought that Jennifer Smith would be the wise, sage voice of reconciliation in America?
And that's her accent, too. She was reassuring.
Yes.
Well, I had somebody come at me recently and, you know, say, like, have you ever thought about why these people voted the way they are? You know, do you think they're all just racist and sexist and homophobic? And, I mean, I feel like that covers a lot, but surely there are those people that are not quite that way, but they're just not ready for the change yet. Mm-hmm. Right. So I wish they could kind of break out of this.
Well, I think, Chris, Ryan and I talked on Review America. Like, I think that there's levels to it, right? Like, there's right. probably, like you said, 30% of that 70 million that can't be changed, can't be swayed, can't be reasoned with one way or the other. Like, they are what they are. You know, it's the old Dennis Green. Here's another sports reference that Tim will love. It's Dennis Green at the podium. The Bears were who we thought they were, right? Like, those 30% of
that's Trump football, voters. Right?
Yeah. Like, that 30% of Trump voters are who we thought they were. But there is that other 70%. And varying degrees of people that might be willing to listen. The problem is, and Brian said this on the show, like, they might not have the education. And, like, we can roll our eyes because we know better and we know more. But, like, there was a time when we didn't know everything either, right? And right. then some of us, like, we're still learning things. And so, like, I feel like there's got to be, like, if I take two steps forward, you got to take four steps forward. But there has to be, like, if I'm going to move to you, you got to move to me. And
well,
so,
this is
like the people you can work with, Chris, I think that's where you can find reconciliation.
Yeah, this is where I do agree with Vanessa on. My whole thing is this. I do think we are going to have to reconcile with 71 million of these people. But as Democrats, as progressives, there are going to be certain things that we bring to the table that are non-negotiable. I'm not negotiating with you on what racism is.
Right.
Racism right. has had a long definition. We know what the fuck it is. We need to move past that discussion.
Yep.
Now, how right. are you going to react to racism? I'll have that discussion. I'll have the discussion about how your reaction is going to be to sexism. We're not going to just pretend that it doesn't exist. And I think that's where that's the frustrating part of my job is we have to understand as Democrats, because I am a Democrat, admitted Democrat, that there are just certain conversations we have to move. And there are just certain conversations we have to refuse to have. We're not talking. I'm not going to let you qualify racism, sexism, homophobia, things of that nature. We're not doing that. That's not what I'm here to fucking do. That's not what my nonprofit is going to be about. But what we can do is we can talk and maybe reach some kind of reconciliation. But we're not going to argue against sociology, things that have been studied, things that have been proven through trial.
Climate change, science-based,
math-based, and ideological, like things. If you're like trying to control someone's body, we control someone's life on a ridiculously level besides like taxing them. That's not a conversation. Stop controlling what people do with who they want to marry, what they want to do with their bodies, but kind of like other than a mandated vaccine or whatever, because we really got to get out of this COVID thing. Right. Like, that's where I draw the line. When people start to use the Bible or whatever to try to control people's lives, I'm a good Christian, but I at least believe in God. And I know that like, that ain't how you do that. Come on. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, these people have caused me to not be a Christian at all. But that's another conversation for another day. So.
Well, it's like Tim was saying earlier, like there has to be a baseline, right? Like there's a baseline of basic, like the bare minimum of human decency.
Of decency.
Yes.
For far too many of the folks over the past 4 years, they haven't even had that. So now's the chance going forward. Like, if you can have that bare minimum, we can have a conversation. But if you ain't got that bare minimum, I don't have time for you.
That's
what I'm struggling with myself, is that there is one side of my family, one half of my family, that is pretty overwhelmingly conservative, let's say. And I've never particularly struggled to, like, maintain having a relationship with them because they voted for George Bush, let's say, twice, or Mitt Romney, even. Okay, like not what I did, not what I'm in favor of, but they're still my family. I can like live with it. Mm-hmm. And where I'm really struggling is, okay, you voted for Donald Trump not once, but twice. You had 4 years of evidence and decided, I want more of that. And I didn't hold my nose and do it. Like, I was actually really enthusiastic about it. And I'm like, how can you square these things in your mind? And it sort of puts you in the position of, do I just look at my family and say, these are not good people. And I don't want them in my life because I don't know how to reach them. Like, are they part of this 30% that truly is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had those same reconciliations with friends and family members. I think my mom voted for Trump again. So,
mine did too.
So I know how it is, man. And that's why I work in politics. I have to talk to people that I do not like every day. You know what I'm saying? And I have to find some kind of commonality with them just to be at the negotiating table. This shit is not an easy thing to do. You know what I'm saying? You have to talk. But what I've found for me, what works personally for me is when I talk to people, I don't always have to talk to them about politics. Sometimes we'll just have a talk about just everyday things. And then I slowly see their mind change. And I can slowly look at the world through their eyes a little bit better. And then maybe we can have a conversation. Because I do think it's important to kind of, you know, not to sympathize with racists and bigots and people like that, but just to kind of understand why they think of things the way they think of things without just making assumptions. And your anecdotal evidence is good enough to make those kind of conclusions. You know what I'm saying? Even if you just have one or two like friends that, or family members that are just backwards thinking and stuff like that, but you still love them. And once you talk to them a little bit more, it'll be easier for you to approach these difficult discussions when the time comes to, you know.
Well, see, like, Jamie, real quick, we're gonna lose two of our guests here.
I gotta run.
Yeah, me too. Sorry.
Oh, Vanessa Shark and Jennifer Smith got to bounce. Oh, see again, like why all the wonderful black white nations always got to go. before we let y'all go.
Shit don't get done if we're not doing them.
Right, Vanessa's got to go out there on the front lines of the revolution. Jenny's got to get back. Jenny's got to get back to that fifth of Pappy Van Winkle. I know the deal. Right. that Johnny Walker blue. First of all, Vanessa Shark, my sister, my friend, let the people know where they can find you out here on these podcast streets and throw up your socials if you want. And this has been fun, my friend.
It has been fun. Thank you, Brother Nate, for inviting me. I always enjoy you know, the assortments that you gather. So thank you guys for indulging my rants. I do get a little loud. you can find me at Vanessa Shark on all social media. And you can find me, ranting with, you know, towards at Nate and Brittany and Clement on the BL underscore podcast, the Black Lightning podcast. That is how active I am. So there you go. Find me.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Vanessa. And Vanessa, it can be found on a couple episodes of TDT Talks. One, like if this is your first time hearing Vanessa and you want more, check that episode out with just me, Steve, and Vanessa. We get Vanessa's origin story and you find out where all this passion came from.
That's true, actually.
Yes, thank you, Vanessa. And I'll talk to you soon. Man. Love you.
Bye, love you. Bye.
And Jennifer Smith.
Brother Nate.
What can we say about Jennifer Smith? Like, I appreciate you bringing your stories from Florida. Cause, yes, you are a Florida Floridian correspondent. You are,
hey, look, I just live in Florida. Okay? Us a glimpse of that word. I'm not from Florida.
Yes. Oh, of course you're from Alabama. Like, how dare I scully you by?
Look, there's a difference.
But Jenny, let the people know about the Jenny position and everything that you got going on, some of which includes Timothy Capel.
A lot of which includes Timothy Capel, because I have a podcast feed. It's called The Jenny Position. So you can find on all podcast catchers. And you can find me on Twitter as well, at Jenny Position. I have some wrestling shows over the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed and also on the North South Connection podcast feed. Mm. And so just follow me on social, whatever. I'll link all my shit if you want to hear it.
Good stuff. And we might get Jenny on a upcoming edition of Chain Reaction for Survivor Series if we can swing that. So
I could probably do that.
Be the last you've heard of Jennifer Smith. So Jenny, appreciate you as always, my friend. Have a good night. Be safe.
Thanks, y'all too. And thank you for having me.
Go call half of your family members and spread the good word.
I will. They're all racist assholes.
Oh, Smith, ladies and gentlemen. So, yeah, now it's just the fellas. This is the boys club. So,
Jenny was kicking me under the table because she knows that I can't stay all night either, but I don't want to throw a grenade and then run out of the room. So I'm going to hang out for a bit here and perhaps get the hot tag by anyone who may be running in. But yeah, Jennifer keeps me on a short leash. She knows I like it that way. But I'm gonna stick with you guys for as long as
Tim, we talked about it before the show. Leave your John King fantasies out of the podcast.
Oh, come on. Everybody loves those John King chart throb fantasies.
Well, I think we're getting close to wrapping up. We'll probably rock another 15, 20 minutes or so. But Tim, like, let's pick up on that point of reconciliation, because I have a story that I did tell on the Review America, where I have a friend, like somebody who I consider like a good friend, who voted for Trump twice. And, you know, Marcus, like Saturday night, like, you know how I was Saturday night, Marcus Vandenberg. Like, I took all of Marcus Vandenberg pettiness lessons that I've learned over the years and applied them to all the memes and videos and songs I could post. And so I guess, you know, my friend had caught wind of that on social media and sent me a message in the inbox, let me know that they'd voted for Trump. And so the way I handled that, Tim, was like I told them that I appreciated them telling that to me. It didn't make me think that they were racist or sexist or homophobic or anything like that. But it did make me raise an eyebrow, you know, because I feel like, and again, this isn't to kind of point fingers or cast aspersions on this person, but I feel like if you rock with me, like there's a disconnect if you're voting mm-hmm. for Trump. And maybe like we didn't get super deep. We talked for maybe about 10, 15 minutes and, you know, we were cool at the end of the conversation. But like, you know, maybe it's an economic thing. Maybe it's just like Chris was saying, always voting Republican, no matter the candidate, you know, kind of wanting that balanced government. But like, I do feel like there's conversations that we can have, like it doesn't have to get contentious, you know, because there are people that are worth reaching out to, because this person like had never shown me any hint of being like your stereotypical MAGA person. So like I think if I had known, like if this person had shown signs of being racist or any of that stuff over the years, it would have all connected and clicked, but because they haven't, like, I'm not going to throw that friend out.
And I think that's where I get stuck too, because when you do sit down and have a conversation with someone like this, you get a sense that there's a disconnect between their values and their vote. If you sit down and describe, well, these are, you know, like traditionally liberal policies. Like, does this sound like a good idea? And they'll say, yeah. I think that'd work for our society, for our country. But then when it appears on a ballot, it's like, you can't go for it. I don't know if it's because of the labeling or is it as simple as like a branding thing? I don't know.
Like Obamacare, like a lot of people in those Midwest areas like Obamacare. They just don't like the name.
Yeah, you call it something different, and all of a sudden they're all for it. And it's just, that's where I'm like, what do we do about that? And not something that we're going to solve here on this podcast, but I just wish.
Certainly not without the services of Jennifer Smith.
No, yeah.
But Marcus, I love what Tim just said right there, and I think that'll be like a bumper sticker because, like he said, the disconnect between somebody's values and their vote. And granted, like you live in a state that's overwhelmingly blue, but have you kind of in your travels, you know, particularly maybe some of the folks that you in business, like have you run into many Trump supporters over the past 4 years?
I have not. And it's funny, I live in a neighborhood that I would say it's probably 50-50 in terms of Democrats and Republicans. And it's really hard still to find, I think, people that are publicly Trump supporters. I think there are a lot of closeted Trump supporters. I think that's the only way you sort of get to that huge number. And you're sort of like, how did this happen? Well, it's because people that are sort of around you that you don't know who they're voting for are actually voting for Trump. So I was trying to think if there's someone personally in my life that I know voted for Trump last week, and no one has come up. I haven't had a conversation about that yet. So I'm sure there's people out there, but you know, it's been a little hard to find.
So where do we go, Chris? You are the political science expert here. So like this country has gone through 4 years of division, 4 years of, you know, sniping back and forth, 4 years of a president who added, you know, to that division and that disruption. Now, you know, come January, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, new regime in the White House. Where do we go from there?
Okay, so my whole thing is we have to think about America, the fragility of democracy, because for all intents and purposes, we aren't a democracy. We're a democratic republic. We're a democracy in that we vote for elected officials. That is where our power ends as far as that process is concerned. We vote for them and then we trust them to make the decisions we need them to make. So that's what makes us a republic. So we're a little bit of both. We have to be involved. If you're enlightened, if you're progressive, if you're woke, you owe it to yourself, to society, to be involved at every single level. You want to be a capitalist? Be a capitalist. We need politicians. People have to do that work, and that work needs to be encouraged. That work needs to be, they need to have STEM programs, like the programs about political science that operate like STEM programs, because people do not take the process seriously. But like we said earlier, a lot of Black folks did vote the right way, but you don't know how in danger that we were. And if we would have just had 1 or 2% more vote the other way, Trump would have still lost the popular vote, but he would have won the presidency again. You know, like, and I don't ever want that ever to be forgotten about or slept on, you know? So we have to take the process seriously. We've got to participate in society. We've got to just make sure we're watching each other's back, you know.
And for you, Tim Capel, like again, we lean on the on your wise Eurocentric wisdom, brother.
Eurocentric, wow.
I'm trying to think of as many different ways I can to say white.
To say white, you know, no, it's fine.
but like just for you, Tim. Like, do you see the country progressing? And to Chris's point, like, do you feel like this election was just kind of a one-off where it was this weird storm of a higher turnout because the country took advantage of mail-in ballots and we were under the specter of coronavirus and Trump was such a polarizing president where you had such a big rise in people engaging in the process? Or do you think this is something that we can actually sustain?
Wow, what a question. In a lot of ways, it does feel like it was a perfect storm this year in the same way that it was a perfect storm in 2016 that got Trump to power in the first place. And I guess what scares me a little bit, and I don't want to end on a sour note or anything, but we talked about how just incompetent Donald Trump was. Like, he has this cult of personality, and that's really the only thing he had going for him in terms of advantages. Like, he had no political savvy, really. He sucked at being a politician, essentially. And I'm like, what happens if someone comes along who's like a Donald Trump, who has that same cult of personality, but also knows how to play the game? And that's what's...
Then we get President Lex Luthor.
I mean, yeah, which it was like Donald Trump was a would-be Lex Luthor. We had this almost, I don't know what to call it, like a wannabe despotic fascist dictator, but he just wasn't good at pulling the strings, so got him out of there. And we're just left with this question of what do you now do with those 70 million people? They don't just go away or move on or join you in the fight. They're still out there and they're going to be looking to put that energy behind someone else. And that's why I'm just like, we got to keep our eye on the ball. I don't want to have a situation where we see Donald Trump sweep in and get swept right out. He's a one-term president regarded as a loser, but Joe Biden is equally a fluke. Because the only person he could beat was a Donald Trump, and then someone stronger comes along and shows him the door. So, you know, again, goes back to let's not rest on our laurels. I don't think anyone is doing that. But, yeah, Chris has a great point about just the vulnerability of our democracy. The system worked this time. A lot of ways, again, Saturday felt validating of just the power of the vote. The system worked the way it was designed to. It resisted attempts to be meddled with. And that took a real push. And you're like, man, those safeguards, I don't know, they survived this test, but what if they're tested a lot harder? So that's sort of where I am in terms of just looking towards the future. Who's the next Donald Trump? You know, there's always another clown behind the next.
We just had a Nazi elected to Congress. So.
Yeah, not a good look, right?
Yeah. So, and I like what Tim said right there, Marcus, in the fact that, like, back in 2016, I thought Biden should have been the choice because he's the very specific antibiotic for the Trump illness. You know, for this country, because I feel like he speaks to that Democratic base, obviously, but he can talk to enough of those disaffected white voters in a way that I think, you know, unfortunately, Bernie or Elizabeth Warren or even Hillary could not. So Joe was like the right guy for the right job at the right time. But Tim's right. You know, Marcus, like there does need to be this vigilance politically. Where do you see things going for the next 4 years and beyond? Like, do you have faith, Marcus, that things have turned the corner, or is this like, is the light at the end of the tunnel just a train?
I think a lot of it depends on sort of how Biden can reach out to the other side, and if he can find a way to at least try to become more civil with Republicans, and not just the ones in, you know, the House and the Senate, but just the ones he's going to experience in his everyday walks of life. I don't see Biden doing two terms. I don't think he's going to run a second time. And then the question becomes, if it's Kamala, then who do you pair Kamala with to give the party the best chance of getting reelection? And, you know, ideally, like, I would love to see, you know, Kamala and a Stacey Abrams or Kamala and another Black woman. But, you know, I think these are the things you sadly still think about.
You can't have two gimmicks in the same match, brother.
Yeah. You have to have some type of strategy in order to deal with the part of America that's not as progressive. So I would not be surprised if it was Kamala and a white male as the VP. That feels like the safest ticket if you're going to go with Kamala. I mean, it you know, granted, Tim Kaine didn't move the needle at all.
No.
Like Kamala did for Biden. But maybe, you know, between now and 2024, there is an up and coming Democrat that is actually going to sort of inject some life into the party.
Yeah. I think if like two that came immediately to mind, like if Ossoff pull off the Senate race in Georgia, like I think Ossoff is an up and comer. But also like out of this year's Democratic field, like I kinda like me some Mayor Pete. Like he got a little something to him. Like Mayor Pete got Mayor Pete, he's kind of this unicorn because he's got like the all American. Like he looks like he could have played a point guard for the Indiana Hoosiers back in '88. Like he looks like he's a scrappy white player with a high motor, but you know he's also a gay man. So like he has ties to the LGBT community, and he does have some progressive value. So I feel like Mayor Pete is like this unique combination that him and Kamala. That's an interesting ticket, in my opinion.
What's going to be important for Biden and Kamala, because I don't think they necessarily need to go the traditional white male route. It's going to matter how they're able to change and shift culture in the next 4 years. Because if we're still here, then there's a good chance they could even they'll lose in 4 years, right?
Trump might run again, damn it.
Right, exactly. So they need to be looking at changing and shifting culture. And Vanessa brought up a point, and I next time we're on the air together, we'll talk about this more. But she talked about how Daniel Cameron was a Black man, and that's exactly why I'm building a nonprofit, because the Republicans are gonna have minority operatives working with them. You know what I'm saying? David Clark, Candace Owens, all of these people.
Dr. Ben, who just got the Rona.
So we're not just going to be training any Black person that wants to be a MAGA. We're looking for targeted minds, you know what I'm saying, in elected positions, because it's got to happen. Because now there are people that are saying that the guy that killed George Floyd there's like the odds of him getting off went up. If there were the right political operatives in office, this wouldn't even be a discussion.
And I think for me, like looking at the next 4 years, guys, I feel like there's a lot of work to be done. But on the same token, it is good, right? Right now, like this week, like take a breath, because I feel like, Tim, like people have been carrying so much unknown anxiety on their shoulders and around their hearts for 4 years that they didn't even like, they don't know why they wake up in the morning tense. They don't know why they wake up in the morning and go outside and it's already a bad day. And it's because we've had this specter looming over the country for 4 years. Every time we go on Twitter, he's there. Yeah. Every time we go on, turn on the TV, he's there. Read the newspaper. The people that still read newspaper, he's there. You know, you can't escape the dude. And with Joe, I feel like Joe is the right man to turn down the temperature in the country. You know, he's like we all had our fathers or uncles that were like the master of the thermostat. Like, couldn't nobody else touch the thermostat growing up? And I feel like for like 4 years, Trump has had the thermostat on 85. It's like, why the hell is it so hot in America? It's so hot, Chris. Like, Marcus, did somebody turn the temperature up? I feel like Joe's going to have it like right at 70 degrees for the next 4 years, and we can start to get things done. And so, yeah, there's got to be some reconciliation. There's got to be some legitimate, real, good faith conversations, like Chris was mentioning. Good faith conversations need to happen. There need to be non-negotiables, right? Like, again, we can't spend the next 4 years arguing about climate change or arguing about COVID or arguing about do Black Lives Matter. You know, we can't spend the next 4 years arguing about things that we should already, you know, to quote your man Thomas Jefferson, you know, things that we should already hold to be self-evident, things that don't need to be proven again and again and again. Like, and there needs to be that level, that baseline of decency that Tim Cable talked about. You know, like, I don't have to agree with you on every single point, but I do feel like if we can agree on, you know, four or five big things, then we can discuss the minutiae, right? We can and fight and argue about the minutiae and infrastructure and military spending and stuff like that. But we got to get the little stuff done first. You know, it's like COVID. Like, other countries get to have sports, Tim, and get to have gatherings because they did the homework first. But in America, like, we haven't even done the homework first and we want to go outside and play.
No, and we're really not big on showing our work either.
Yeah, no.
It seems like.
Yeah.
All of us want to turn to the back of the book and get the answers.
It's very much about instant gratification. That's sort of the culture. But I think what you said is really what it comes down to, is just bringing that temperature down. That's something you and Brian Mann talked about on your sort of post-mortem show, which was so very good, by the way. And yeah, at the end of the day, I think that in these next 4 years, if people are less emboldened to just say whatever springs to mind, because they're taking their example from the leadership of this country who tells it like it is, right? That was part of Donald Trump's appeal. Oh, he's saying the things that I wish I could say, and now I'm going to say. And maybe, just maybe, if people think before they speak now, because they're a little bit less emboldened, they will arrive at some conclusions. I don't know if there's not enough brain cells in some people to do that. I'll grant you, but I don't know that everyone is necessarily that lost. If you just stop and think, use this miracle of a brain that you've been given through God or science or whatever you want to call it, use it. Don't take it for granted. Stop. Think. Critical thinking. These things are important.
Yes.
And maybe we can bring that back into the culture and the conversation.
Yes, I co-sign that 100%, Tim Cable. And yes, you know, you mentioned instant gratification in this society, and I feel like the listeners were instantly gratified by tonight's proceedings, gentlemen. So let's go around the horn one last time, let everybody know where you can be found and where they can check you out, whether it be podcast or socials or whatever. Timothy Cable, my brother, where can people find you out here on these podcast streets, sir?
Well, you know, kind of similar to the black women of this country, Jennifer Smith kind of did my work for me in announcing her slate of podcasts. I appear on several of those, but just to reiterate, check out The Jenny Position on your preferred podcatcher app. Also look for Place to Be Nation Wrestling, where I have a couple of wrestling shows there, talking WCW and PTB NXT. Check out as well the North South Connection podcast feed, where I do a show. It is called Shrink Wrapped, The Psychology of Superheroes, a newer
show. Yes, that is an excellent show. And we appreciate you coming on, Brother Tim. It's always good to talk to you. First time here on this sports show, and I think you did really well breaking down. You did a great job breaking down the Lakers zone defense.
Oh, man. High compliments. Well, thank you so very much, Nate Milton. It was great to talk to you and everyone tonight. This was really a treat for me to do.
Yes, sir. Chris Ealy, the professor, a.k.a. our very own Steve Korblacki at the big board, breaking down the results of this. And Chris, let the people know about Real Power Dynamics and, you know, your nonprofit again and anything else that you want to talk about.
So, yeah, I'm doing the, still doing the podcast, Real Power Dynamics. The episodes are a little bit more sporadic now, but, I'm working on my dissertation, in my postgraduate studies, in my once my dissertation is complete, I'll be able to start slowly unveiling. I'm kind of unveiling the nonprofit right now, but I'm just still looking for like a board of directors and things of that nature. I welcome spirited discussions because those discussions need to be had. The conversation that we were having with Vanessa, I've been having those conversations all week. So I'm always up for whoever wants to ask me questions. Shoot me an email, realpowerdynamics@gmail.com, and then you can tweet me at kmeasydoesit.com. Just look for me. I'm around.
Good stuff, brother. I'm telling you, Marcus, like 20 years from now, Chris gonna be like the Black James Carville. Like, we gonna go to him on election night and he's just gonna be sipping on some Cavassier, like telling people what the election results are gonna be. My brother Marcus Vandenberg, where can the people find you on social media? Anything else, anything that you want to let the people know? Cause I know you're a busy man these days, brother.
Yeah. You can find me on social media at Marco Will, MarcoWill. I am taking over NBA coverage for Yahoo Sports. So you can check out our fine NBA work on all of your Yahoo Sports NBA platforms. And that's it.
I'm telling y'all, ain't Joe Biden good? Look at that, Tim Capel. Joe Biden ain't even officially been sworn in and a black man gets a promotion.
Look at that.
Thank you, Joe. you can find me on Twitter at @8 M-O-Z-A-I-K at Nate Mosaic. Check out the Patreon. We have a Patreon, Kings of Sport. Patreon.com/Kings of Sport. If you liked Vanessa Shark tonight, and why wouldn't you? Vanessa Shark, Brittany Monet, and I got together to do our very first live watch, Marcus. We did a live watch of Hamilton on Disney Plus, and that'll be dropping around Thanksgiving for the people out there. So,
okay. I haven't watched it yet, so maybe I'll watch it and watch it.
Yeah, I'll say, watch it first and then watch it again with the commentary, because it's funny, because Vanessa, Brittany and I kind of pestered Vanessa into watching it. Brittany's like a diehard Hamilton fan. I'm new to the congregation. And we just had fun for two and a half hours watching that musical. So you can check that out on the Patreon. As Tim Cable has mentioned a couple times tonight, over at Post Wrestling, you can find me on a couple shows. The most recent show is an episode of Review America, which Brian Mann and I brought back for the first time in 4 years to talk about the election. There's also the Rocky Mountain View Picture Show. Up there, which both Marcus and Chris have appeared on. Sooner or later, we'll have to find something for Tim to talk about with these Dwayne Johnson films. But you can check that out on Post Wrestling Black Lightning Podcast with Vanessa, Brittany, and Clement Bryant and myself. You can check that out over at DCTV Podcast. I got the main event at Place to Be Nation. I got a bunch of shows out here, but just follow me on Twitter at @MozaiK, and you can get links to all of that good stuff. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you for taking time tonight to discuss what's going on and saving democracy, saving the republic. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Fun show, man.
Yes. So,
thank you, Nate Milton.
Thank you, Tim Capel. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Kings of Sport. We'll be back maybe next week. Maybe we'll talk actual sports next week, because Mark has been sitting on some petty Cam Newtons for like the last 3 weeks.
Oh, man. We didn't talk about Van Jones.
Oh, yeah.
We missed that one.
Yeah.
To me, I love Van Jones.
Of course. This is my point. We'll let Van Jones live. We'll let him go.
We'll get him.
Hey, we're still celebrating. It's no need for diversion and I was gonna say no need for diversity. Now I sound like Trump. No need for divisiveness right now. There's no need for diversity.
We could say that for the 2020.
Yes. We will have to do a final 2020 on the and maybe I'll bring Vanessa on for that one. And then you guys can continue the conversation. I think that'd be fun. So the 2020, we'll have to do a wrap up on that show as well. But that's gonna do it for this edition of Kings of Sport. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading the show. And we'll be back hopefully next week with another edition of the World's Most Dangerous Sports Podcast. So for Vanessa Shark, for Jennifer Smith, for Tim Capel, for the Professor, KME, for Marcus Vandenberg, and for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. Neon lights, a Nobel Prize. When a mirror speaks, the reflection lies. You don't have to follow me. Only you can set me free. And Tim's just having flashbacks to CM Punk right now. Because you've been down with the Kings. The cult of personality. I know your anger, I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm a cult of personality. Like Mussolini and Kennedy. I'm a cult of personality. The cult of personality, the cult of personality.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network. Whether you like it or not, he's bad. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks, ass.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna leave it all on the mat, because that's what I do when I get it done, so I can do it. Yeah!